Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Leap of Faith with Penina Taylor.
Hello, and welcome to Leap of Faith, the program where we talk to people about their spiritual journeys so we can gain insight and inspiration on our own spiritual journey. I'm your host, Penina Taylor, and I'm excited to be here with you today. Those of us who are parents often feel like we have to walk a tightrope with our children, trying to strike the right balance between discipline and love. Sometimes it seems like no matter what we do, we just can't get it right. And we get these messages from the outside world also. You have to be firm or they'll be spoiled. You have to be gentle or they'll have all sorts of emotional issues. We just can't win. This concept is also reflected in Jewish thought through the Kabbalistic concept of the Sefirot, the 10 attributes or emanations of God. When we look at the Sefirot chart, we see that on one side is the attribute of Gevura, which is might or strength, and it's the essence of judgment and boundaries. On the opposite side is Chesed, which is kindness or benevolence, and its essence is loving kindness and unbounded giving. They're both important. They're both emanations of God, but perfection is not found in either one. They must be in balance to achieve that. This is why with the Sefirot, right between boundaries and unbounded giving is something called Tiferet, beauty, splendor. It's beautiful because it's the essence of balance. Beauty is achieved when we find the right balance between might and kindness. Finding that balance is key, not just in parenting, but in all relationships. But how do we find that balance? As elusive as it is critical and can in some cases even mean life or death. When it comes to faith, we sometimes don't even realize that in our effort to be disciplined in our moral character or religious observance, and to help others to be as well, we may overstep the balance and push people away from our faith rather than drawing them towards it. Today on Leap of Faith, we're going to be speaking with Rabbi Yitzchak Michelson, who walked away from his Jewish faith when he was pushed over the edge by that lack of balance, and who will share with us how he came back and what he's doing to make sure that others don't get pushed over the edge as well. Stay with us for this amazing conversation with Rabbi Michelson when we come back from the break. I'm Penina Taylor. You're listening to Leap of Faith, and we'll be right back.
Always challenging the status quo. Hello, I'm Rod Bryant on Beyond the Matrix here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I want to encourage you to listen each week, every Wednesday at the same time, for an amazing show that will challenge you, inform you, and inspire. News, views, and wisdom for the nations. Here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Don't forget, Beyond the Matrix every week, Wednesday, here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Leap of Faith with Penina Taylor.
Hi, and welcome back to Leap of Faith. I'm Penina Taylor, and today I'm speaking with Rabbi Yitzchak Michelson. If you're thinking that his name sounds familiar, you're probably right. Rabbi Michelson is also a host here on Israel News Talk Radio. He hosts a show called The Science of Kabbalah. He is also the former outreach coordinator for Jews for Judaism, which is how I met him many years ago. Rabbi Michelson has his own incredible story to share, and I know that you're going to be inspired. So I'm really excited to welcome Rabbi Yitzchak Michelson to the show today. Welcome, Rabbi Michelson.
Thank you for having me, Penina.
It's an absolute pleasure. We don't get to talk very often. We see each other a lot on Facebook, but I'm really excited to have this conversation with you. Now, as my listeners know, I usually just have my guests jump right in with their story. So Rabbi Michelson is really interesting because you actually have, even though some of the elements of your story are similar to many of my guests, one of the things about your story that's similar to mine is that you were actually born Jewish, but you were born to an observant home, right?
Well, I say I was born into an Orthodox community. I don't say home so much because I would say my family was more semi. My father grew up in Borough Park. Those people that know Borough Park, Brooklyn, Borough Park is one of the most religious sections of New York. And so my father grew up in that environment. And so when I was growing up and it was time to go to synagogue, we were obviously part of an Orthodox shul. While we attended what would be considered, I guess, back then a black hat shul, and my rabbi at the time was very connected. He was a student of Rabbi Yitzhak Huttner. People that know the Orthodox community in New York would know that name. Very famous name connected with Rav Soloveitchik back in the day, who was considered the Rav, you know, along with Rav Moshe Feinstein.
Right.
So I grew up in that environment, and of course in an Orthodox synagogue, where my lifestyle was really influenced by was my rabbi. What ended up happening was, while my parents were involved, my rabbi really was the one that took me under his wing. And at the time, he didn't have any sons. He only had daughters. At the time, I think he had like 4 or 5 daughters. And it wasn't until I left that many years later that he had sons. And so he would pull out certain, you know, bachrim, certain young boys that were learning in the Talmud Torah there, and he would kind of take them under their wing. So I was basically trained personally by him. I tell the story that most people, when they go for bar mitzvah, I didn't just have the typical bar mitzvah where you go up and you could get called up for an aliyah to the Torah and you read from the Haftorah. I was required by my rabbi to do the entire service, every one of the services, what we call shacharit, which is the morning service, musaf, which is the mid-morning service on Shabbat, mincha and mariv. I had to do all the services as the chazan, plus lain from the Torah, read from the Torah, plus do my Haftorah. So,
wow.
A little bit different than the average bar mitzvah that goes on. So I had a very strong Orthodox influence in my life, but I take a step back from saying that my family was like fully on board. Like I have a sister that's 7 years older than me, and she was never, you know, she never connected with it. Only now that she's much older, and obviously from my influence, she's getting much more connected to our Yiddishkeit now.
Wow. Now, did you attend the Talmud Torah, or were you going to a public school?
No, I did attend the Talmud Torah, and my rabbi was what you would call like a firebrand in the Kiruv community back in the late 60s and 70s in New York. He was very, very involved in Kiruv, which, for those people that don't know, that means outreach, and he brought many, many people, many families, and that's what he did. What he did was he brought the families to Yiddishkeit through the children by starting the Talmud Torah. As a matter of fact, I know many of the guys that I went to shul with stayed from a close friend of mine that I reconnected with on Facebook, and he and I grew up together. I mean, literally, we were in each other's houses almost every day together, and he stayed from the entire time as a result of the influence of our rabbi. And then I connected with somebody on Facebook just the last couple of days, somebody that sent me one of those messages where they do a little film on Facebook where you've been friends with somebody for a year, and it turns out that this guy is a Russian that went to a school called Ber Hagola, which was a school that my Rav started after he left our community. He moved to another community, and he started this incredible school where he brought in Russians, thousands and thousands of Russians, of course, that grew up with no understanding of Judaism, and started a school and brought thousands of Russians to Yiddishkeit and to Frumkeit and observing Judaism. So he has a incredible legacy.
Wow. Okay, so you had this fairly strong background. I don't know if your story is anything like mine, but I went to a Hebrew day school for a couple of years, but my mother wasn't religious at all. And so I had this kind of almost a cognitive dissonance going on, that my life in school was separate from my life at home, because I really couldn't tell people in school the kinds of things that I was doing at home. And I couldn't share with my mother because she didn't want to have anything to do with what I was actually learning in the Hebrew day school. Was it like that for you, or was there more consistency?
Well, I don't know that. I think what it was is, in many ways, because I probably came a little bit more observant than my parents, that they sort of humored me. They were happy with the fact that I was, because I grew up in an area, in a neighborhood, which was considered lower middle class, or even on the upper lower class to lower middle class. So I grew up in a neighborhood where it was very easy to get into trouble. So the idea that I was involved in something other than being out on the street with with my friends, you know, appealed to them, obviously. But in many ways, the more religious I got, it was probably more of a thing like humoring me than it was participating. A funny story is that just in the last few years, I would often tell my wife about this, you know, how interesting it was growing up like that, and how my mother would sometimes be concerned that I was kind of being whisked away by the rabbi. And my mother, B'liyan Hara, she's 95, but probably about 2 or 3 years ago when we were in the States, she was sitting in the car and we got on the subject of Rav Germain, and my mother from the backseat goes, "He tried to steal my son from me." My wife started laughing, and then later on she said to me, "Wow, I finally heard it straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak," because yeah. I had been telling her for so many years about that. So.
Now, if you had remained Orthodox from the time you were in elementary school, this would be a very short interview. Yes. But that's not what happened, is it? Sure. Why don't you share with us what happened?
What happened with me was, I think, and I only now understand, because obviously you and I have similar backgrounds later on in life with some of the organizations that we've been involved in and speaking to people that have been disillusioned with religion. And I think what happened was there was a specific incident that took place right after my bar mitzvah. I was probably about 14 at the time. I was still very involved. I was learning Gemara. I had a teacher that I learned with. And there was a very big event that was taking place at the shul that I was supposed to be involved in. And several weeks before, I had broken my foot and had a cast on my foot. And I was supposed to be meeting my mother at a certain time. And the rabbi would not let me leave. No matter what I said to him, you know, obviously it was he could be very strict at times. And no matter what I said, that I was going to get in trouble for not meeting my mother at a certain time, he refused to let me go. And when he did finally let me go, it started raining and I had a cast on, and it's casts back then were not like they are today. I mean, you had plaster casts that you weren't allowed to get wet. Mm-hmm. So I literally found a plastic garbage bag out on the street that I wrapped around my foot. When I ended up finally getting to my mother, I got in trouble with her and ended up getting punished by my mother for being late. And it just kind of sent me into a spiral, into a frenzy, literally, where that Shabbat, my parents woke me up to go to shul and they said, "Why are you not dressed?" And I said, "I'm not going." And they said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I'm not going." And I refused to go and I refused to participate. And only a short time after that, I then broke my leg playing football. And while I was in the hospital, I wasn't in a full body cast yet, which was later on, but I had been put in traction. So my leg was hanging up in the air with weights hanging over the side of the bed. And my Gemara teacher, my Chavruta, that I learned with, came. And there didn't seem to be a discussion over what had taken place. The main concern was making sure that I had talit and tefillin and that I was davening every morning. Now, picture this. I'm in a New York City public hospital in an orthopedic ward, not like you would be in today in maybe a semi-private or private room where you might be by yourself or with one other person. I mean, I'm literally in a room with 8 or 10 other people. And because I was 14, it was an adult ward. I literally had a guy to the right of me handcuffed to the bed.
Oh my.
Because he had tried to steal a car and attack the police and was shot by them. I had a guy to two beds to the left of me because he was on withdrawal from whatever drugs. He was climbing the walls. And they came in and they wanted me to, you know, put on tallis and tefillin. It just started to spiral further for me. And so I really just got totally disillusioned by not a relationship with Hashem, with God, but really with organized religion. And that kind of set me on this path towards just walking away from everything that I knew in Judaism and kind of more of a secular path, just sowing my wild oats, so to speak.
I think that there's an important lesson that can be taken out of this. People don't realize how important even the little things, like it seems like such a small thing, but for a teenager, these things can be huge. They can be a whole world. And really that it's so much more important to show our children love and concern and care about who they are over and above whether they followed the letter of the law in performing the, you know, rituals that are required by Judaism.
Right. 1,000%. And, I can tell you story after story about that, not just related to my own my own situation, but so many people that I've talked to over the years now that have been through similar situations, and that thank God I've been able to help back on the path towards Yiddishkeit and towards a relationship with Hashem.
Thank God. Thank God. Nowadays, I think people also are starting to realize the importance of that. Okay, well, it's time for our first break, so I'm going to stop you right there. And when we come back, we'll hear more about your journey out of Judaism and then find out how you made your way back. When we come back, we'll hear more of Rabbi Michelson's story. You're listening to Leap of Faith. I'm Penina Taylor, and we'll be right back.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I am Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country. From Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
Leap of Faith with Penina Taylor.
Hi, and welcome back to the second segment of Leap of Faith. I'm your host, Penina Taylor, and today I am speaking with Rabbi Yitzchak Michelson, who before the break was telling us about how an incident in his life triggered kind of his withdrawal from the Jewish community. Welcome back, Rabbi Michelson.
Thank you.
Okay, so why don't you take up where you left off?
So I just want to touch on a point that you brought up before we went to break about the idea of really showing love over ritual. And it reminded me of a story where I spoke to a young, not so much a young man, but somebody who was already in his 40s at the time. And he mentioned to me that he grew up in a kind of a secular Jewish home and really was never, had never gone to shul, but his mother wanted to have a bar mitzvah. And so she hired a rabbi to sit with him and to teach him the brachot, the blessings to say over being called to the Torah, etc. And he claimed that the rabbi basically slept most of the time. And the day that he came up and was called up for an aliyah to the Torah, and he was cutting his teeth on the Hebrew, that the gabbai was standing there, and the gabbai looked at him and basically said, "What are you, a goy?" Which is basically asking if he was a Gentile. And this is why he never set back foot in a shul ever again. And oftentimes when I speak, as you do, and I speak in shuls, people will understand what I'm talking about. Even Jews will understand this idea of kind of being put off by some of the attitudes that we see. And they'll often say to me, "Well, what's the answer?" And I said, "I can't give you an answer because every shul is different. I don't know what's going to work for you, but certainly we have to emphasize that of course, halakha, Jewish law, and mitzvot, keeping the mitzvot, keeping Torah is very, very important. But the idea is that, being that I teach Kabbalah as well, it's the idea of this desire that Hashem had in bringing about creation. We have to understand that Hashem's desire in bringing about creation, and while he used the Torah and all these things to create the world, it was his desire to be in relationship with something outside of himself.
Right.
And to provide for them and to provide good for them. And we know that Hashem created the world for good and desires to give good. And so we have to look at the fact that in many ways, the idea of keeping the mitzvot and keeping the Torah is only part of the formula for us to be in relationship with the Creator. So I think it's very important that we make that point. As far as going back to my story, that disillusionment that caused me to walk away really just set me on a path of secularism, really, you know, not really being connected to anything as far as religion goes, although never doubting that there was a creator, never doubting the idea of wanting to be in relationship. I just didn't understand the need for it to be done in that structured way that I had grown up. So for many, many years, I just kind of was just this secular Jew that did his own thing. How I got involved in the second part of my life, which is also very typical that we hear of, at least for men. I was very involved in the entertainment business at the time, you know, in the nightclub business and so forth. And I used to do some music production, bands and shows. And we were doing a show in New York, and I had flown up there to kind of oversee what was going on. And I met this young lady that was part of the marketing, and I kind of liked her. So I invited her to fly down to Florida, and she was going to fly down for, it was New Year's weekend. And she had said to me, well, I'll come under one condition, that you go with me to this meeting on Sunday.
Yeah.
So I said, what kind of meeting is it? And she said, oh, it's a fellowship. And I'm like, I don't know what a fellowship is. Okay, you know, if I'm just thinking about the girls. So Sunday came along and she said, okay, well, you know, you made a deal. We have to go. So we get in the car and we're driving and driving. And it turns out that this group used to meet in a store or something like that. And this was the first time in their own building. And we're driving, we couldn't find it. And I was getting more and more upset. I really had a major anger issue back then as well. So I was starting to get angrier and angrier. And I think she was starting to get a little scared at the time. And then finally we found it and we're driving up this long driveway. And I look up on top of this building and there's a huge cross on the top of it. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing? You know, what's going on here? So we park and we get out of the car and we go in, and I'm like, what's going on in this place? It's like, there's a guy up there. I could tell he's not Jewish, but he's talking about Israel and he's talking about the love for Israel, and they have music playing and all the music sounds very Jewish light, I will say. And people are coming up and people are, you know, being introduced to me, and you know, the guys are hugging me, and of course when they found that I was Jewish, it was as if the Messiah had come in.
Right. Yeah, back when you and I became involved with Christianity, it was unique, and so we were very special.
Right, we were considered very special. And so of course, you know, what I'm talking about is I walked into a church. Now, I walked into a church that happened to have a very, at the time I didn't know what it was, what they called it, but had a very messianic flair. Mm. Still a Christian church. It wasn't like a messianic Hebrew congregation.
Right.
But it was a church, just very messianic, with a large, one of the larger populations of Jewish people of any church that I've seen since. Mm. And it seemed very homey. And it was, that was it. I ended up going and staying and going back, and to the point that eventually I became a pastor at that church, and then eventually had my own congregation that I co-pastored in Florida. But I, like so many people, when you get involved in that side of things, it can be just as overwhelming. What I find is that while the Judaism that I walked away from was, what's the word I'm looking for, deficient in the idea of love, on the other side of things, the Christians were not deficient in love, but there was so much need, especially when you become a leader. Mm. People basically suck the life from you. I didn't see that in Judaism, but when you get involved in Christianity, and really the reason for that is I've learned over the years, especially after coming out of it and trying to figure out how those of us that I consider fairly intelligent people, fairly knowledgeable, how were we able to get involved, and not only get involved, but stay? Mm-hmm. And the solution that I came up with was the idea that we're dealing with something that's based solely on emotion.
Right.
Like I said, we walked into a place and suddenly people are hugging you and suddenly people are loving you, and you see this overabundance of love. One of the things that we talk about, those of us who then came out, like you and I, that were involved in organizations like Jews for Judaism and other counter-missionary organizations, will talk about this idea of love bombing.
Right.
And the idea that this is one of the ways, typically, I mean, look, everybody desires to be attached to something. Everybody wants to be loved. Everybody wants to feel like they're connected to something. And if those deficiencies exist either in your home life, which we often see people that end up getting involved in these religions that are based on emotion, have some kind of deficiency in their life. They have something emotionally that's missing, whether it's something that's missing at home, something that's missing in the synagogue, something that's missing in a relationship, and it's fulfilled in that. The issue is that it's not real. because it's based on an emotional decision. It's not based on, you know, wisdom and knowledge. And that's where I make the distinction between Judaism, real Judaism, when we're talking about not the way we grew up, but when you're talking about the Judaism that we've come to know, it's a combination.
Right.
It's not solely one or the other. It's not totally based on emotion, but it's not devoid of emotion. And it's not totally devoid of wisdom and knowledge. It's kind of a balance between those things. It's not one or the other.
I think it's interesting that you brought up the issue of emotion, because especially for people coming into the church, and especially the more evangelical and even charismatic churches, really do provide this excessive amount of love, which can just be such a refreshing thing for people who have been struggling with that. But the interesting thing is, though, that I always thought, you know, that Christianity is all about love and Judaism is all about fear. And I learned that actually the truth is that Christianity is about love and fear, but it's the fear part. They get you in with the love part, loving each other, but they get you in with the love part, and then they keep you with the fear part, because they convince you that if you leave the church and if you abandon Jesus, then you're going to burn in hell forever. And of course, that's a question that you and I are constantly having to answer. You know, if I'm wrong, then I'm going to burn in hell forever, and I'm scared to take that leap. Yeah,
we see that happening often with people today. You know, of course, where we are now, we deal with more and more people that come to us, and that's the fear that they have.
Right.
When you look at Judaism in its purest sense, you know, typically just based on learning what the sages teach. I mean, really, when you think about it, what other religion in the world accepts the fact that that all the righteous of the nations have a place in the Olam Haba, in the world to come?
Right.
There is no other religion like that. Every other religion, for the most part, says you either believe what we believe or that's it, you're done.
Right.
Whereas most people don't learn. And that's not something that basically we're taught even in Judaism. One of the things that I was always surprised at when I came back out and made tshuva was going and speaking at yeshivot, at the different yeshivot. Like, I remember speaking at Or Sameach in Yerushalayim, and I came to realize how little some of the young men knew about the Tanakh, how little they knew about their own Bible, about the Hebrew Bible.
Right.
Because one of the things you realize is that they're not taught the Navi, they're not taught the prophets.
Okay, I hate to stop you there, but I have to stop you because we are out of time for this segment. You are listening to Leap of Faith. I'm your host, Penina Taylor, and we'll be right back.
Listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Bentekoa, and each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany's but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Hi, I'm Rabbi David Aaron. The soul basics are the most profound, most essential, and yet often the most neglected in our education. Join me for Soul Talk on Israel's News Talk Radio and discover the secrets to love, spiritual growth, and personal power.
Leap of Faith with Penina Taylor.
Okay, welcome back to the last segment of today's Leap of Faith. I'm your host, Penina Taylor, and today I'm speaking with Rabbi Yitzchak Michelson, who before the break was telling us about how he had gotten involved in the church and had become a pastor and a co-pastor of a church in Florida. So why don't you continue from there, Rabbi?
So I was saying that, that the same way that I first got disillusioned with Judaism, eventually got burnt out and disillusioned with Christianity as well. And I kind of took a break. And then I met somebody that I had met at a conference once before that described himself as a Messianic rabbi. And I'm like, okay, I never heard of such a thing, but okay. And he invited me to come. And of course, I ended up in his place, which was they call the Messianic Synagogue.
Right.
And of course, it's got some of the trappings of Judaism. But at some point, I also came to realize that none of the people there. Now, remember, I talked about my bar mitzvah where I did Shacharit and Musaf and Mincha Mara of all the different services and, you know, read from the Torah and read my Haftorah and here are all these guys that claim to be rabbis and claim to be Jewish. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, none of them can go past, you know, maybe saying the Shema.
Right.
Which is foundational prayer in Judaism, you know, the idea of recognizing the oneness of Hashem, the oneness of God. One of the things that I always tell people where while I was very involved in Christianity, one of the things I can say is that we were not, my whole time there, I was really, I think I got more caught up when I started saying about the church that there was a guy up there that I knew that was not Jewish. I couldn't for the life of me understand why there were these people that were not Jewish that were trying to teach other non-Jews about Judaism.
Right.
And I think that that's what kind of pushed me into kind of a leadership role. And it's the same thing when I kind of was in that transition, the Messianic Hebrew movement, was this idea of none of these people knew what I knew. As a matter of fact, I did a big conference in South Florida where we had about 1,300 or 1,400 people. And they only had one guy that would do the Torah portion at their Shabbat service. And he would do like maybe, you know, three or four psukim, three or four verses from the Torah portion. And for some reason, he refused to do it that year. And they typically did not have anybody that they didn't recognize as a rabbi come up, but they had no choice but to ask me. And I did the full aliyot. I did all for the Torah that day. And people were like clamoring over me. As a matter of fact, you can imagine after I got done in this incredible silence, somebody yelled out, "Thank God I came back." And what the heck is that? Shabbat, after Shabbat was over, when they had the marketplace open, somebody came over to me and they said, "Are you the guy that read the Torah this morning?" And I said, "Yeah, that was me." He says, "I'm the one that yelled out." And I said, "Well, what was that about?" And he says, "Well, somebody told me that I was coming to this Jewish thing, and I came here last night, Friday night, and I saw nothing Jewish until you got up there Saturday morning and read from the Torah. And then at least it looked like something Jewish to me."
I think that's also something that a lot of people don't understand. When we were involved in the Messianic movement, the vast majority of Messianic congregations, at least in the United States, are full of non-Jews. In fact, there are many congregations where there's not a single Jew, not even the leader who calls himself a rabbi. We were in Maryland, which has a fairly high percentage of Jewish people. Actually, the one congregation I was thinking of, we were in Northern Virginia, and there were a whopping like 8 people who were actually halachically Jewish out of 250 members. And that was a large percentage. I think only maybe New York and Philadelphia have higher percentages than that.
Right. And my experience is that most of the leaders, because I was very involved, I was very like the right hand to former president of the MJA, which is one of the largest Messianic organizations in the U.S. So I was very much involved with all the top leadership. And I can say it's my experience that most of them are intermarried. Almost every guy that identifies himself as a Messianic rabbi that I know of is married to a non-Jew.
Right. And you're talking about the higher up levels where they're
I'm talking about the higher up levels where they're actually, where the guy who's calling himself a rabbi might be halachically Jewish.
Right.
In every case, they're married to non-Jews, which then, you know, shows you that they have children that are not Jewish according to halacha. So they're perpetuating, you know, nothing. They're certainly not perpetuating Judaism. But the thing for me, I wanted to really go into what really caused me to come out. You know, one of the things that happened to me was that I really felt like I needed to get back to a place where I was when I was younger to really brush up on my Hebrew. And so I have a close friend of mine that's a Hebrew scholar, and we had met and we started talking, and we made a deal that he would learn with me and we would study biblical Hebrew together, but we would do it without dealing. I wouldn't try to convince him of anything. He wouldn't try to convince me of anything. And we wouldn't deal with any of those controversial verses in the Tanakh. And I spent two years studying with him, and I basically studied myself out of that belief system, because the more I reconnected with the real Hebrew roots, with my ability to read the Tanakh in the original language,
right,
I started to my whole foundation of what I was believing fell apart. Now, the good thing for me, as I said, the two major things for me that at least I walked away with intact in my own soul was the fact that my wife and I never sought to turn Jews into Christians. We were really more of a ministry that was trying to teach Gentiles the truth about Judaism. The second thing was is that we believed that he was Mashiach, but we never believed that he was deity.
Which was
unusual for most places. But that's the thing that I could never make sense of. I could never make sense of that whole Christian Trinity thing, especially coming from an Orthodox background like I did. So, but really what ended up happening was I started looking at some of these things, and specifically like in Leviticus and Vayikra, the sacrificial system, and reassessing that from the original language and realizing that this just doesn't make any sense anymore to me. And so what ended up happening was interestingly enough, it was Parsha Lech Lecha, that I decided to Lech Lecha. I got up in my own congregation because I did have, you know, what was considered Messianic Hebrew congregation in South Florida. And I got up and did a message on Lech Lecha. And then I said, speaking of going forth, I called my wife up and I explained to the congregation that we really didn't believe. But anyway, to make a long story short, we basically let the congregation know that that if people still wanted to continue to study with me from a Hebraic perspective, I would be happy to sit down and talk to them or do something at the house. But then we were closing down the congregation, and we were planning to make Aliyah, which is a whole other story.
A little bit
you know about.
Yes.
The battle for that, you know, based on my history. So, but yeah, we closed the congregation, and we were very lucky to, around the time that we still had the congregation open, but were basically kind of transitioning out, and met this amazing rabbi that was introduced to us actually by a very well-known Hebrew roots guy, a rabbi that lives here in the Shomron in Itamar, that turned out to be my rabbi here in Israel, Rabbi Moshe Goldsmith, who ended up marrying us under the chuppah when we made Shuvah. And I was able to connect with him and of course, like I said, do things in the right way, made Shuvah, go under the chuppah in a proper way, so forth. Because when Leah and I got married, we obviously did not get married in an Orthodox shul, an Orthodox ceremony. So, and then learning with Rav Moshe as well and moving forward. And then, of course, deciding that one of the dreams was, when I was growing up in that Orthodox shul, the plan was for me to go to yeshiva. I was planning to go to Eastern Parkway Yeshiva at the time, until that whole incident took place and I walked away. So I felt that it was time in the last several years to readdress that and to go after my smicha and use that title legitimately.
Right, which yeah. You did. And mazal tov on that, by the way. If I can just bring you back to something that you mentioned,
sure.
Which is, I remember one time when I was at a conference and a Jewish conference, Eisha Torah, and a couple of Christians had come into the hotel and they were talking to me, long story about how we got connected. But anyway, they said, oh, we're studying Hebrew at a synagogue. And I could tell that what they meant was a Messianic congregation. But I said to them, I was very awkward situation, but I said to them, I said, you know, you need to be careful, because if you start studying the scriptures in the original Hebrew, you may discover that they don't say what you thought they said. And I think that's a really important point to make, because that was key for you coming out, was realizing what it actually said in the Hebrew.
Well, I also realized how little, on that side of things, the way I said, how little people knew. When you have people saying, oh, I'm learning Hebrew in a congregation? What are they learning? How to say shalom?
Right. Okay, well, Rabbi Michelson, we're actually out of time. I can't wait to have you over, have you again, so we can continue the conversation. But I just want to know, if somebody would like to be in touch with you, what's the best way that they can contact you?
The easiest way is info@KabbalahProject.com. 2 D's, 1 L. KABBALAH.com.
Okay. Info@KabbalahProject.com. Great. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today. You've been listening to Leap of Faith. I'm Penina Taylor, and I would love to hear from you as well. If you'd like to be in touch with me, you can email me at Penina@IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. That's PENINA@IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Thanks for being with me today, and I'll see you next time when we take a leap of faith together here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. Just click the orange button at the top of the IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com homepage, log in as yourself or an anonymous guest, and join in on the fun. You'll meet other listeners from all over the world who listen to Israel News Talk Radio, and you can make new friends. Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with us.
We love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candle lighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.